Joan Seaman, Reel 5. Could I ask you now about leaving the works and your demob, you know, when this occurred?
Yes. Well, it was a year later, because the number, you have to had so many years service, and if you were married, you got so many points and that sort of thing. I was in the entertainment's office. I booked the films. I issued the sweet and cigarette coupons and did all that sort of thing, and played the piano for officers' mess parties, and went back to Trinity College of Music. I did do that. You were able to carry on, if you could, your vocational training. So I went back there and had one lesson a week, and the then CEO, somebody called Davidson, I think he was named, he was a lovely man, he loved to hear me play, so he got the grand piano moved from the officers' mess onto the hall so I could practice every lunchtime, and he used to come in and hear me, which was so nice. And they moved it in the pouring rain, and it cost £80 then, which would cost about £500 now to have it repaired. Nobody knew, so I nearly went mad. Anyway, so I did that for a year. I was nearly posted to Air Ministry. In fact, my posting came through in the autumn of 45, and I was playing the piano for something or other. And I rang up the squadron leader, who was in the Bentley Players, where he was just waiting for his demob. And I said, Wally, I've been posted to Air Ministry. And he said, do you want to go? And I said, no. He said, OK. And that was it. But because of that, it was how it works out, my demob papers were a bit slow in coming through, you know. And I said, look, I should have been demobbed by now. And they looked into the orderly room. They said, well, you should have been at the Air Ministry a long time. But anyway, they managed to get the papers, and I was going to be demobbed. And on the last night and the last day in the WAF, we had the sports day. It was a sports day dance. And I could have either gone to that or something else. And I remember, too, to see Fontaine's first performance of Giselle at Covent Garden. And I thought, no, I'll go to the sports day dance because it's the last chance I'll have to go. And we were allowed to wear civvies, and I had a black dress, and I had long hair then. And I saw two, I was dancing with somebody, and saw two people in civvies come into the room and the hall and standing there. And I thought, my goodness, they're the two best-looking men I've seen in this place for a long time. And one came over and asked me to dance, and that was my husband. So if I hadn't been delayed, I wouldn't have met him. And he was stationed at Stanmore Park, which was another... And he was a photographer in the Air Force with the bombing raids and that, and he was just serving out his time, you know. And he was demobbed... about a month after me, I suppose. So then, yes, I had to go to Wolverhampton. Was it? Yes, I'm sure it was Wolverhampton. I'm not 100% sure, because I went to Wolverhampton before. Wolverhampton was the nearest big town to Bridgnorth, and I'm not sure whether I've got that. Bridgnorth is where I went for my initial training, but I'm pretty certain it was Wolverhampton. And we stayed there the night, and it was all very quick and easy, and we handed in our uniform, and we were allowed to keep our passion killers, as we called the knickers. I don't know quite what happened to them. And then I just came home. That was all. We given travel warrants, you know.
Did you get anything else from the Air Force, you know, in the form of sort of a lump sum of money, a gratuity at all?
Very little, as I remember. As I say, I don't really remember. I wouldn't swear to it. I might have done. I can't really remember that. I think my thought, having just met the man who was going to be my husband, it was A, getting out of the Air Force, because I did not want to stay in because of the pettifogging regulations. I loved the work in the operations room. That was so exciting, and you felt you were doing something arduous, though it was. But I hated all the saluting and calling somebody ma'am and sir. And you couldn't wear what you wanted to, and your hair had to be off your collar, and your skirt had to be so many inches above the ground. Oh, no, that's not my I'm far too independent, didn't want that at all. And of course, I just met my husband, so I can't really remember. That's what my mind was full of at the moment. And
could I ask you about this sort of demob? I know men were given a suit, weren't they?
Yes.
Did women have anything?
Not a thing. Not a thing.
Did you have extra coupons or anything?
Oh, I think we were now. But I, as I say, this is a blank. I can't really remember. So I would hasten to say yes, definitely, because I'm not sure. Okay. If I'm not sure, I don't want to say it, of course.
How difficult was it, you know, adapting to Civvy Street after all these years, being told what to do?
Well, I had been living at home, don't forget. So that wasn't so difficult, you know, I was still, and I had stopped being under parental control. That stopped one particular day when I was going to a party at 9 o'clock and my mother said, "You're going to a party at 9 o'clock at night?" And I said, "I'm starting work at midnight." And that stopped it. So I wasn't under any parental control, and I was very happy at home. I mean, we did have a... I was very lucky. I had a happy family life. It was great. My brother was sent to India, actually, at the end of the war, so he had 2 years in India when he was demobbed, you know, doing, just administration duties, which he hated. Yes, and I did still carry on with my music studies, so that was still the thread through. I tried to earn my living with music. I played for certain ballet classes, for ballet companies, and I was offered a job in Chester at a very big school as their pianist there. And funnily enough, a great friend of mine who was being a ballerina in the Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet has just taken over her job there as principal of that school. So we're sort of almost coming full circle, you know. I'm sort of minding her house for while she's away. But anyway, so it wasn't quite so bad. But I didn't want to go to Chester because my husband, you know, meeting him, I didn't want to go right up there. And so I thought, well, what shall I do? You know, there was obviously I couldn't earn my living with my music. And the CEO of the camp at one time, that we had at one time, I can't remember his name, his double barrel name, he was a general manager of Phoenix in Bond Street. And I thought, well, I had been in the fashion industry, I'll see what opportunities they have. So I went up there and I happened to bump into him. He said, "Hello, Joan, what are you doing here? I said, I've come for a job." "Oh," he said, "have they given you one?" I said, "I haven't been yet." And he said, "Oh, yes, of course I'll give you one." So I worked in the coat department and the suit department for about a year, and then I was made underbuyer of the sportswear department, and I stayed there, and then I left there when I was married in 1950.
What so was it that like, was my, you know, being in the fashion trade after the war? Because am I right in thinking there were still coupons?
Oh yes, there were definitely coupons. Yes.
So, you know, when did things become a little easier, would you think?
Well, they were easier. They certainly were easier then. I mean, materials were easier and they could have more style. And the new look came in too, as well, you see. Everybody went wasp waists and very long skirts, as long as this. But of course, it was unheard of. Sorry, as long as this skirt I'm wearing now.
Which is, really
which is
quite
yes,
a lengthy
it is, yes. Yes, so which was a complete opposite to the what we had been wearing during the war. Because obviously they must have had more material to play with then. Yes, that was great. Off-the-shoulder dresses and very full skirts. Quite different. Yes, it was relaxed. And I always remember, too, gabardine suits were very fashionable, too. And tailored gabardine suits and the prostitutes, the madams used to come in and want those. And if I sort of, if they came in from the wholesale and I put one aside, I used to ring up one of these, my clients, these ladies, they used to come in for it. I always used to get a lovely fat tip from them. It was great. Yes, that was quite fun, you know.
Did you find there was a sort of yearning for something pretty and feminine after the war?
Yes, I think so, but not obtrusively so. No, not really. There certainly wasn't in my case because I don't wear pretty things are not my style. Elegant things are more. So I didn't feel that with me. It was nice to get nice, be able to get nail varnish and that sort of thing again, which we liked.
One hears of the invention of nylons in the
Yes,
war. Was this a big thing?
yes. We didn't see it. That was something that you loved your American boyfriends for. They gave you nylons. Yes, and then they came in after the war, nylon stockings. It gradually, you know. By the time I was working at Phoenix, which was a year after, you could buy them. That was all right then.
When you look back, you know, at the war and your experience with the WAF, how important do you think the contribution of women in the WAFs was to the Air Force?
Oh, I think a lot, because my particular job, I can't ask for anybody else, but my particular job, I think I've said the girls were better at it than men. They were more nimble. They were quicker. The only time that I know that something awful happened, it was a couple of ponderous middle-aged men, extremely respectable. I think one turned out to be a bank manager, you know, but they didn't have the necessary attributes for that particular job. So I think as I say, I can't speak for other jobs, but I think it was an enormous. It one did one's bit, you know. It was it's an awful cliche, but it's the only way I can describe it.
Do you
And they
think
did
you
what
were
they
given
did.
recognition for that, first of all, by the men in the RAF?
Yes, I think so. I think, well, the men that I was with, definitely, yes. I think, and this is only a think, this is only an assumption, I think the WAF were, because they did more specialised jobs, I think they were given the recognition from the men in the RAF more than the ATS were from the army. Because they had an awful lot of women there who were not doing the specialised jobs. There weren't so many specialised jobs. I mean, let's face it, the RAF is a highly specialised field. I mean, aeroplanes, the whole purpose of the RAF was to get aeroplanes off the ground. So, therefore, they must have been more specialised jobs.
So,
I
did
don't
you
know.
think, you know, being in the WAFs was sort of more elitist than being in the
Yes,
ATS?
I do. I do. I think we felt that. And I think a lot of people did too. Yes.
And how do you think you compared with the Wrens?
We thought the Wrens were snooty, yes. But I think we thought they were deaf, they weren't on a par. They did specialised jobs in the same way, really, because we got aeroplanes off the ground, they got ships out to sea, basically. The army had loads and loads and loads of infantry. You know, it's not as technical. They needed lots and lots more cooks and bottle washers and you know, things like that. Not parachute packers and you know, all different thing altogether.
Do you think the WAFs had public recognition for what they did?
I don't know. I think they were just lumped with the services. I don't think it was, well, the Air Force did well and the WAFs did well. The Air Force did well. Blank. All of us all together. That's my impression, anyway. I don't think it was the WAF that was SIGS. But the WAF were included in the Air Force. That's
Do you
what I
think
felt.
there was ever any prejudice against women in the services? That there was sort of a stereotype of what sort of woman was in the
I
services?
didn't find it. I didn't find it at all. No. No, not at all. The only time I found it, of course, was going over to Germany and those British army officers, thinking, you know, that perhaps we'd been sent out for their amusement, their entertainment, in one form or another, whatever form they came to think of. But, you know, but no, I didn't. I found we were all there doing a job. That was the important thing, the job. Nothing else.
Do you think your experience in the WAFs has been important in your life? It sort of affected your life. I know you met your husband.
Yes, no, it most certainly has. I don't flap easily. I don't flap at all easily. When I was teaching in a tough school in Brixton, we used to have tears and that sort of thing, and I didn't. In fact, one time I did lose control and I just screamed at the kids. The headmistress had her room upstairs and she flew down and said, go and get a cup of tea, I'll take over, because it was so, so unusual. I think it has a bit of an adverse side in one way, because I don't cry easily. I didn't cry when my husband died anywhere near as much. And just in this past week, a very, very close friend, he was the only man that my husband said he was jealous of. He was a dancer, he was Fontaine's partner. And I know his wife very well, he's married, I've known them for years and years and years, and I've heard he's got a brain tumour. And it was such a shock on Monday, and I couldn't cry until a dress rehearsal on Wednesday, and I saw Eric McMadov dance one of his solos, and he danced it the way Michael danced it, and then I cried. But this, and I felt so much better for it. But I think this is the self-control that one got doing that job. And I've said that people were saying, you know, teaching. Well, nothing in teaching was tall, anyway, came near to when you were standing there plotting, and you know that if you didn't plot accurately, people's lives were in danger. And even though you shut it out of your mind, it must have been there. So nothing is really, you know, comes up to that. It can't do. So I think it was good for me, really, on the whole.
Do you think the role women played in World War II had any effect on the women's liberation situation? I'm not talking about the movement.
No.
Women's sort of images of themselves.
I think the First World War did more. Because the First World War, women did jobs that no one would ever dream of them doing. In fact, this was an answer to my last university exam. And it was a question. I answered it in this way. Must have been all right. Because you know, this was the breakthrough, I think. In the Second World War, they did jobs, but people were quite happy about them doing jobs because they'd already done that sort of jobs. All right, perhaps they took on a bit more responsibility. But, I mean, myself, when I left, I did another job. And when I married, I left work because I wanted to have a child straight away. And I had 7 years of domesticity without working, and then I got thoroughly bored, did some more work, you know. So I don't think it was so important as the First World War. Nowhere near. Perhaps other people. I think perhaps women found they could do more responsible jobs instead of some of the menial jobs that had been ascribed to them. That's, you know, I can do this, but I don't think really so much affected women's lib in parentheses as the First World War did.
I suspect you've seen an awful lot of coverage of World War II, and of course more and more is coming with the anniversary, you know, D-Day this year and the B-Day next year, the 50th anniversary. Yes. And I wonder what you make of it. How accurate from, you know, judging that against your own experience, and whether you think there are any myths that have been built up which you would like to demolish.
Well, I've just been re-seeing and recording The World at War, and I think that's very good. That is pretty well straight. As I've said, I don't agree with this business of we shouldn't have bombed the Germans, because perhaps we shouldn't, but that was with hindsight. Even some of the films made at the time were wrong. I mean, the most glaring example is Millions Like Us. I mean, I saw that and picked so many holes in it. Seeing it now, with the girl going to was called up. She goes into the office of somebody who says, "Now, what would you like to do?" "I'd like to join the Air Force." "Can you cook?" "No." "Well, then you're no good for the Air Force." "Well, then can I join the ATS?" "Can you cook?" "No." "Well, then you're no good for the ATS." So she goes into a factory. That is completely wrong, because they were training you. If they wanted cooks, they would train you. They wouldn't expect you to do it, like they didn't expect me to know how to plot. They trained me. They discovered that I had an aptitude for it, but then they trained me. It was about six girls all went into a factory. There was one girl that looked as if she stepped straight out of a Noel Coward comedy. And in fact, when I was in the Air Force, we saw this, and everybody was in fits of laughter at it. Because particularly for her, the way she talked, well, it was 1920s, it wasn't 1940. There was also a girl who had a degree. They didn't exactly specify what degree, but had a degree from university, and a Welsh girl, and she was drafted into the factory. And no way would she have been drafted into the factory. They'd have found really something far more to use her talents. Everybody's abilities are yours. And yet, Open University held that up to us as the epitome of how it was like in the Second World War for women. There was a sob story in it, you know. Ah, wasn't it lovely when the girl's husband, she marries and dies, you know, gets killed. And, you know. I found a lot of it quite sentimental. As a matter of fact, I found the D-Day anniversary things, an awful lot of people cried at it, but most people who've never had anything to do with it. I didn't bother to see it, and funny enough, my son Mark said, you know. The only thing I did, which was good, was Charles Wheeler, who's a very, very good reporter, and that he had two whole programmes of the whole programme right the way through, and I felt that was worth it. That was good.
Well, you've certainly made your contribution today, Jo.
thank you
very much indeed for coming and telling us about your wartime experiences. It's been very interesting.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure. It feels, as I say, a relief to me to get it all off my chest.
Do you think that it does help to talk about it?
Yes. And particularly now when people don't know about it. And particularly when I go to America, and I always say the difference between us and America, and I love my daughter-in-law, I love my American other grandmother. We are such friends, you know, we're comfortable with each other. It's lovely. But I think the difference is that they have never been bombed. And we have, in the same way as we can't understand France and the occupied countries, because we were never occupied. And that is the big difference.
Yes, well, there's a thought, and thank you very much.
That's right, it's a pleasure.